Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Tonight we're discussing sharks of the San Francisco Bay. They are the bay's apex predators, critical to the aquatic food web and leading indicators of the health of the entire bay ecosystem. Yet, relatively little is known about the 11 species of shark who call the San Francisco Bay home. What is the size, range, and biology of each of these populations? How imperiled are they, and how concerned should we be? Tonight, we'll speak with scientists and researchers who are working to enhance our understanding of our resident sharks and the threats they encounter in the bay's urban setting, including pollution, overfishing, and habitat degradation. And we'll begin to address the key question as to whether the data gathered so far support the creation of a shark sanctuary in the bay. What would a shark sanctuary mean for commercial and recreational fishermen and other marine users? And how would a sanctuary in the bay contribute to shark conservation efforts worldwide? Joining me to discuss these issues this evening in the studio are David McGuire, director and founder of the ocean nonprofit Sea Stewards and currently the director of shark programs with the Turtle Island Restoration Network. He is also a filmmaker and research associate at the California Academy of Sciences. Welcome, David.
Thank you. It's great to be on KLW.
And we're also joined here in the studio by Steve Shirley. He's a fisherman and shark tagger and founder of Team Fish Finder, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable sport fishing. Welcome, Steve.
Good evening.
And by phone, we're joined by Christina Slager. She's director of animal care and aquatic exhibits at San Francisco's Aquarium of the Bay, where she directs a 7-gill shark tracking program aimed at conserving the bay's shark population. Welcome, Christina.
Great to be here.
And as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll open the phones in about 15 minutes, and you can call 415-841-4134 with your questions and comments. Again, that's 415-841-4134, or you can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page. So, Christina Slager, Director of Animal Care and Aquatic Exhibits at San Francisco's Aquarium of the Bay, I wanted to start with you. Why don't you give us an overview of the shark population that currently inhabits San Francisco Bay?
Wow, that's a big question to start with.
Pick it apart slowly.
Alrighty then. There are, as you mentioned, 11 species of sharks. Some are resident in the bay, some are just guests, but they certainly come and go in the bay. And for almost all of those, actually probably all of them, the population numbers are unknown. And I know that seems incredible in this day and age, but it's amazing how little research has been done on these really interesting and important animals. The ones you're most likely to see in San Francisco Bay are leopard sharks, brown smoothhounds, gray smoothhounds, spiny dogfish, soupfin sharks, and of course, the big apex, largest shark in the bay, the broad-nosed 7-gill shark.
Okay, and that's the one you work with?
That's the one that, the Aquarium of the Bay is doing research on, that's correct.
I see. Okay, and so how has the shark population, as much as you can tell, given the uncertainties you've described, how much has the population changed over time?
Well, we certainly know worldwide that a number of shark species have declined by 90-95%. So although we don't know the specifics of what's happening in the bay, just because there hasn't been enough research to give us those sorts of numbers, we know that worldwide sharks are in big trouble. And it's certainly possible that many species will be lost by the next generation or the next 10, 20 years.
Hmm.
So you can sort of hypothesize that if sharks are in danger globally, probably the sharks in the bay are in danger as well.
And of the 11 species you spoke of, how many species exist now compared to in the past?
I am not sure. I would think historically all of these were here, but the numbers would have changed. For example, white sharks probably were in the bay more frequently in days gone by, but they only drop by and visit occasionally now.
So you mentioned that earlier, also just this idea of the visitors. What's the pattern of the sharks in terms of their inhabitants of the bay and the other coastal waters? So do they have a migratory pattern? Are they here all year? Do they come and go and such?
Well, that depends on the species of sharks because they have very different lifestyles. And certainly they are affected by the availability of food, the temperature, the salinity in the bay. And that's really why we wanted to study the 7-gill sharks to find out what these patterns were and just to try and gather some basic data on where they live, where they go, how they make a living, how long they stay. These basic questions are still unanswered.
And again, is this due to the shark itself? Are they that elusive and so hard to study? Or are there other factors that make it so difficult to be able to really paint a more robust picture about their patterns?
Well, you know, those pesky white sharks have garnered all the publicity and research money. No. Actually, I think it's just there are many animals. There is very little grant money. Typically, organizations that do these sorts of things are nonprofit. And the San Francisco Bay makes it harder because it's not like you can sit in your boat and look down through the pristine water and observe sharks in action. Hmm. And, of course, it's also a shipping channel, so in many cases you just can't park and do research. Scuba diving in the bay is incredibly challenging, and again, you know, 3 or 4 inches visibility. So, unfortunately, a location is not helpful in terms of gathering shark information.
Okay. Well, that was Christina Slager. She's Director of Animal Care and Aquatic Exhibits at the San Francisco's Aquarium of the Bay. And you'll hear more from her in just a moment. But I wanted to turn next to David McGuire, Director and Founder of the ocean nonprofit Sea Stewards and the Director of Shark Programs with the Turtle Island Restoration Network and a filmmaker and research associate with California Academy of Sciences. So, David, you being a filmmaker, about sharks, a lot of people's impressions of sharks coming from a particular film back many decades now, Jaws. That is, tell us from your filmmaking, what have you been able to fill in about some of the gaps that that Christina mentions, and maybe dispel some of the mystery and the myth about sharks in your observations of them.
Well, thank you. Great to be on City Visions and talking shark and with my colleagues, Steve Shirley and Christina Slager. Interestingly, I'm actually a conservationist, but I'm also a biologist, but I like to do filmmaking as a method of communicating ocean stories, but also communicating the changing world we live in, and particularly the changing ocean. And sharks are really symbols of ocean health. And as Christina said, sharks are threatened worldwide. Many populations are down to 99% even in some populations. And yet we know so very little about the animals that live off of our San Francisco shoreline. It is quite incredible. And I've always said that diving in San Francisco Bay, which we do, is like diving in a cup of coffee. And so I went to the Aquarium of the Bay one day. I was associated with the San Francisco Ocean Film Festival, and I had a film in it. And I went down to this tube, and there's crystal clear water with these beautiful sharks that we've been trying to look at. And it's like, can I get in your tank and film? So we built a relationship and started out a really great partnership, and it's actually how I met Steve, too. Christina's right. We don't know the population size of the sharks in our bay. We don't know the movements. We are also studying not only seven gills but other species and looking at their movements in a different manner, trying to get at the same question, perhaps, looking at hopefully larger scale movements, but also fisheries impacts, because we really, really don't know. But what we do know is that a lot of these sharks are coming into the San Francisco Bay, and they're reproducing and they're pupping, which makes this a very, very important estuary. It's a nursery in many areas that help us sustain the world population, or at least along our coastline, and even into other countries we're finding, north and south. So this estuary, which we all love, which is an extraordinary place unto itself biologically and culturally as well. We have all these smart people here. We really need to start looking under the waters and loving it and embracing it and really trying to figure out if we can protect this, maybe we can make some difference with the big challenges in the world ocean.
And what kinds of insight to sharks have you gotten by literally being in the tank with them and filming them? What have you been able to garner that might be able to fill in for people the images that they have of sharks, which I imagine in most cases people don't have the most positive connotations. Exactly. Don't hum any more bars, otherwise I have to pay royalties. But go ahead.
Well, every shark is different. And there's almost 500 species of what we consider sharks. And if you look at the whole group, Elasmobranchs, there's over 1,100. So sharks, rays, skates, chimera, these cartilaginous fish that are incredibly adapted and very, very old, very conserved, that is. They've been around some for hundreds of millions of years, and some haven't changed for tens of millions because they've really adapted into this beautiful role. Some, like the white shark, as this consummate apex predator, the top dog in the ocean ecosystem, and others are the mudsuckers, and others are the vegetarians, and the others are the recyclers of the sea. So it depends on the animal. Some are super shy. Over half of the species of sharks are under 3 feet long. We're discovering new sharks even as we're losing them. We don't really understand. We know so little about sharks. It really is kind of amazing considering how important they are to fisheries or impacts on fisheries or impacts on ecosystems. So I think that's what groups like Cal Academy and Team Fish Finder and my group is trying to get at, and how to better manage the system and hopefully how to better protect it. But I started diving in the wild. I grew up diving in the wild with sharks and just used to be lucky enough to see them all the time. When I was younger, I used to live off Santa Barbara, and we'd go to the Channel Islands and dive, and I was actually a commercial diver for a while. And you'd have to avoid hitting the blue dogs, the blue sharks that were on the surface just milling around. Last couple of years I've gone down there, I haven't seen a single blue shark in or on the water. And these are sharks that are getting really, really impacted by long lines for swordfish and tuna primarily, and as bycatch. And so those sharks are actually quite shy. Blue sharks, they're just a beautiful shark, very much like a soup fin shark that lives in our bay. Very, very fusiform. It's like a torpedo. It's just this great shape for swimming. Other sharks, tiger sharks, a few more bull sharks, are a little bit more aggressive or are curious even. I mean, you're definitely in their world. And you're part of the food chain, we like to say, when you enter it. And you have to respect that. And what my experience is overall, I've dove in Cocos Island with our group, Turtle Island Restoration Network. We're looking at hammerhead sharks' movements, tagging hammerheads. As soon as you blow a bubble, they're gone. They know that you are a predator, too. And they really generally don't want to mess with you. So most sharks avoid people. I don't blame them.
So that's usually the right, people's imagination is the opposite of that, right? That they're at risk in being in waters with shark. Is that, are you completely dispelling that, or is there, do people need to be careful as well?
I'd like to say that we're dispelling it. I mean, even with white sharks, the attacks are so infrequent given the size of the population and the amount of the billions of hours that Californians are in the water. And the survival rate, at least in California, is 90% from white shark incidents. And there have been really, like in the last century, around 100. So rare, high survival. Yes, we have the wrong image. Yes, if you're handling a shark, if you're in an aquarium or you're feeding a shark, you want to be careful. If you're in the wild, you just have to observe that shark's behavior. I think the people most at risk are the fishermen, the guys who are out there working, handling either, like Steve, handling the sharks, or the fishermen out there going for a target species, and there is a shark there because they are wild animals. And that's the beauty of it. I mean, what would we live like in a world that didn't have lions and tigers? It would be boring.
Right. And that was David McGuire, director and founder of the ocean nonprofit Sea Stewards and currently director of shark programs with the Turtle Island Restoration Network, a filmmaker and research associate with the California Academy of Sciences. So that's a perfect segue to talk to Steve Shirley, to bring him in the conversation, a fisherman and shark tagger and founder of Team Fish Finder, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable sport fishing. So from the fishermen's perspective, tell us about your experience and your understanding of sharks.
Well, I started shark fishing in San Francisco Bay approximately 30 years ago. And it's a fun thing. Fishermen get really excited when they catch a big shark. So it's a sport that everyone wants to be a part of. And through the years, I've realized that the populations are down. I realized that the fishermen need to be the stewards of the fish. So we need to become conservationists. We need to work to save the species so that future generations have fish to fish for. I interviewed a commercial fisherman that used to commercial fish for seven gill sharks in the bay, and he told me that in 1982, the seven gill population collapsed and they stopped fishing for them. Since then, I have seen what I consider a rise in their population. I feel like they've become more abundant, but now, due to the lack of other types of fisheries, sport fishing party boat captains are targeting the big sharks. So I feel like there's a really strong need to study these sharks, find out the population, and put some regulations on it so that they can't be decimated again.
How did you adopt this view that, as you say, the fishermen should be the stewards of the fish? How did that happen for you?
Well, we're out there at 4 in the morning every day on the weekends when other people are watching TV in their living room. We're out there in the oceans. So we see a lot of things that other people don't see. We're kind of part of the environment. And if we want to continue being part of the environment, continue enjoying being out there, we have to protect what we're enjoying, basically.
And if you're just joining us, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing sharks of the San Francisco Bay with our guests David McGuire of Sea Stewards and the Turtle Island Restoration Network, Christina Slager, Director of Animal Care and Exhibits at the Aquarium of the Bay, and Steve Shirley, founder of Team Fish Finder, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable sport fishing. We invite you, our listeners, to call in with questions and comments on this topic. The number to dial is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. So, Christina Slager, I wanted to turn next back to you because everyone's been mentioning here the decline in the population and have in little bits in their comments have been pointing to some of the reasons perhaps why this is happening. Could you now do again for us a broad overview of the issues that have affected the health of our shark populations or the numbers?
There were so many. Probably the two big players, the two most detrimental problems are shark finning and commercial longline fishing, because in both of those cases, thousands upon thousands of animals are captured, and sharks are really unique in the fact that they typically grow very slowly. Some species of sharks aren't even sexually mature until they're 24 years old. So they reproduce late in life, and they have small litters. So they are really susceptible to this kind of decimation.
So why don't you walk us through the two top things there, the shark finning and the long line?
Shark finning is in response to the desire for shark fin soup, which is popular in some Asian cultures, particularly with older generations. It's considered a delicacy. It's very expensive, typically served at special occasions like weddings, et cetera, et cetera. And back in the day, when you had to go out and hook and line a shark, you know, it didn't really have that much effect on the populations. But now that commercial fishing is able to catch vast numbers of sharks, it decimates their numbers. And it's a particularly egregious practice because all that is harvested is their fins. So live sharks are brought on board. Their fins are chopped off. Animals still alive, in many cases, wriggling in agony on the deck, and the animal is then just thrown, or in most cases, actually kicked back into the water, where it dies a slow, painful death as it slowly sinks to the bottom. So not only is this extraordinarily cruel, it's also a waste of resources. You've captured a big animal, a big protein source, and it's not utilized. So that is a huge problem, and many countries are working to ban the collection of shark fins for shark fin soup. And, of course, I'm sure you know that in California recently, AB 376 passed, which banned shark finning here, the sale of shark fin products. Longlining is a whole nother story, and it's a very common commercial fishing practice. And it's just like it sounds. Long lines of nets, in some cases miles and miles long, are stretched across the midwater, sometimes the ocean bottom, and you catch everything that swims into them. So even though you might not be targeting sharks, you might be looking for mackerel or some other species, sharks, dolphins, sea turtles, all captured. And
this is like what happens with tuna, when capturing tuna and dolphin are...
Exactly.
Okay.
Same principle.
Same principle.
And these are huge factory boats, you know, that process tons and tons and tons of fish. So it's not just, you know, a small vessel, you know, throwing out a net. It's huge. And, you know, insult to injury, a lot of times these nets break, float away, continue to entangle animals. It's just a process that really needs to be much more regulated.
Okay. And David, to you, other factors that you think are impacting the shark population here? And well, I also want to hear from Steve on that as well.
I guess to answer your question, not so much here. I mean, I agree with Christina. The two large impacts historically have been long lining, meaning you're targeting tuna or swordfish with baited hooks. Some of these long lines are 60 miles long with thousands of hooks, and it's essentially a curtain of hooks that are baited. So sharks are the first animals to come to that. They have highly refined senses. They're sensing that fish, that dead fish, the blood, the oil, before anything else does. So historically, what used to be 50% perhaps of the catch were sharks and used to be thrown over the side are now kept just for their fins, and the more valuable swordfish and the tuna is retained. Sharks are high in urea. They would spoil in the fish, so they've maintained the holds, or the fresh fish in the hold, the valuable fish, and the shark fins on the rails. And I experienced this. This is actually, I made a film on shark finning about 6 years ago, and it's what really motivated me to form my nonprofit to really target this issue. I witnessed shark finning on the high seas. I saw dead sharks. I saw the actual practice. And the ships in the South Pacific being loaded up with frozen tuna and frozen swordfish off of these smaller vessels, and the whole ship's vessel, the whole rails are lined with shark fins. Unfortunately, this big phenomenon, it's basically economically driven. Yeah. So it's prosperity primarily in China. And this fad, essentially, that really was a tradition thousands of years ago in China where emperors and nobility ate this dish. Well, now hundreds of millions of people are consuming this dish, and the population of the sharks just can't sustain this demand. So essentially, we're talking about blood diamonds of the sea. We're talking about elephant ivory, and it is wasting shark populations. And that's having a serious detriment to other species and the ecosystem in general.
So speaking of the ecosystem, how about pollution or other changes to the delicate balance of the bay's waters? How is that affecting the health of the sharks?
Right. Well, to bring it back to the bay, I mean, these effects are synergistic. It's not just one doubles the other. It's like the impacts are greater. And so, of course, historically, we've had a huge impact on water quality in the bay. It's much better in the past couple decades. We used to have raw sewage just running like a river. Now we just have a couple million gallons going in the bay sporadically during storms. There's also industrial contaminants from industry, especially in the South Bay. There's the placer mining that filled the bay in is full of selenium and other heavy metals. So there is a great deal of toxicity, and surely it must be affecting sharks and all organisms in the bay. The water quality has increased. We do see periodic die-offs of particularly the hound sharks, the leopard and the smoothhound sharks, when there's dredging or other events that disturb these sediments and have these toxic episodes. There's less problems actually in the bay than in many water bodies. It has a lot of water flow through, especially the front of the bay has these big tides getting that more oxygenated fresh water coming into the bay. That's why the front of the bay off the San Francisco Bay shoreline and the North Bay is a pretty healthy ecosystem. And if we can keep doing some of this work towards ecosystem protection for some of the eelgrass beds and some of the actual fundamental components as well as the apex predators, we're on our way to really protecting our, not just sharks, but the entire ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, I want to turn to you. How about, we talked a little bit about commercial fishing here. How about recreational or sport fishing? How does that impact the shark population here?
Well, I think in the San Francisco Bay, the biggest impact on seven gills is going to be the party boat captains going out and targeting the big female seven gills. In the last 2 years...
What's a party boat?
A party boat is a boat that's approximately 50 to 65 feet long, may carry 30 passengers, and they go out sport fishing for the day. So they target things like halibut. Some go after salmon, some rockfish. Some are using live bait, and they're doing potluck in the bay, floating around catching stripers and halibut and that sort of thing. Since the decline of the salmon, the salmon season was closed for 3 years, All the party boats that used to go out on the ocean fishing for salmon have been in the bay for the last 3 years. So they kind of decimated the halibut population. The sturgeon population is down. All these sport fish are hard to catch. So now the party boat captains are targeting large seven-gill sharks. And if you can imagine a boat with 25 people going out 20 times during a year and targeting these big females, it's not going to take very long to reduce a population by a lot. I feel that is going to be the number one reason that the seven-gill population is going to decline if we can't do something about it right away.
And this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing sharks of the San Francisco Bay with our guests, David McGuire, director and founder of Sea Stewards and currently the director of shark programs with the Turtle Island Restoration Network, Christina Slager, director of animal care and exhibits at the Aquarium of the Bay, and Steve Shirley, founder of Team Fish Finder, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable sport fishing. We'll go to a call and some emails in just a moment. But if you want to join our conversation, 415-841-4134 is the number to call. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page. So let's go to our first caller, Rally in Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm 14, and I'm wondering if there's any way I can get involved with saving the sharks in the Bay Area.
So let's see, who wants to take a turn at this one? Should we start with you, Christina, and then maybe David, and if you want to add something, Shirley?
Sure. That's a great question, because it's people your age and younger that we really need to reach out to and make sure you guys know the significance of what's happening in the Bay and with sharks worldwide. In terms of specific actions, I would say, if you can volunteer at a nonprofit organization that works on the environment or conserving wildlife, that would be great. If you can raise any money and become a member of a conservation organization like David's, for example, or a member of someplace like the Aquarium of the Bay, that money, a lot of the money that comes in for at the aquarium at least, does go to shark research. So that's what I'm thinking on the top of my head. What about you, David?
I would say field trip.
Very inspirational.
To get your classmates interested, too. Go ahead, David.
Well, I mean, obviously, like, one of the very stimulating things to do are go to aquariums like the Aquarium of the Bay or Monterey Bay Aquarium or the California Academy of Sciences, Steinhardt, so you can see it firsthand, and there's educational activities associated with those institutions, which is really great. But like Christina said, depending on where you want to take it, I mean, we have a group in Texas, a Shark Stewards grassroots consisting of kids, and they're out there educating other people about shark finning because they witnessed it on a film and it meant so much to them. I mean, who knows? Maybe you have to work your way up, but I did. You might have to help Steve, like, polish his boat, and you might take you out. But there's any number of things you can do. You could even ask your teacher. We'd like to do something, a shark activity. There are groups. We visit schools. We do this whole Sharktober outreach activities all month of October and have a big Sharktober Fest party educating and celebrating sharks. So there's a lot you can do. There's a lot of information on the web, I encourage you to go to it because it's your generation that's inheriting this mess we're leaving you with, but there's still a lot of hope.
So, Rally, how does that sound?
Good.
And do your homework.
A little overwhelming, perhaps. So you could ask your parents to check out our website after the program, and we'll link the different nonprofits that we mentioned tonight on our website. But do you have any other questions for us?
No.
All right. Well, really, thanks for your call.
Thank you for answering my question.
You're welcome. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. So we also have an email here from George, and he says, I was at the aquarium in Monterey Bay and observed in the open ocean tank that the tuna were far more aggressive than the hammerhead shark. Is that the case in the wild? Do you want to take that, David?
I think so, yeah. Bluefin tuna are like a pack of wolves. They're voracious. And if you look at them in that tank, which is, it's a really beautiful tank, and it's really big, but those are big fish. They're like Volkswagen buses. And hammerheads in general are pretty shy sharks. They're pretty delicate. most of the times to tag them or to even film them, you have to be on a rebreather so you don't have any bubbles. And as soon as you are, if you're on air, you exhaust, they're out of there. So they're also highly vulnerable to drowning on long lines. So we were in Costa Rica. I mean, it's not just the big ships anymore. It's actually small boats from small countries with protections against shark finning are poaching sharks because of the high value. We're at Cocos Island, which is a marine protected area reserve that has little enforcement. And there are whole long lines, sadly, of dead hammerheads because they are more delicate sharks. And some of the more robust sharks, the silky sharks, were still thriving. We were able to cut those and release them. But you get this conception that sharks are this big, you know, 900-pound gorilla in the ocean, but some of them really are quite delicate and quite shy.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. Let's go next to John from Sacramento. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
You have a question?
Yeah, I had a question for Mr. Shirley. These seven gill sharks, are they a smaller species like the leopards, or are they big sharks? What's your experience in catching and tagging these sharks? You get some. Are they big animals?
They grow fairly large. The largest one I know on record is about 400 to 500 pounds.
Oh my God.
So there's a lot of pups in the bay. And there's all different various sizes. And the problem with seven gill sharks is the males don't reach maturity and start breeding until they're at least 6 feet long. And the females don't reach maturity until they're seven and a half feet long. So they take a long time before they start pupping. And by wiping out the big ones, we're wiping out the population, basically.
Wow, those are substantial animals. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, John, for your call.
Okay.
Yep. And so let's turn next to the next big part of the conversation for this evening, which is what next? We've talked about the concerns around the health of the sharks and that what's happening to sharks are probably happening to other species in the bay. And we've talked about some of the issues that have impacted the populations, both pollution-based commercial fishing, longlining, the shark finning. And so next is the conversation goes towards this proposal to create a shark sanctuary within San Francisco Bay. So let's turn to that. And again, Christina, since you've done so well for us, give us a sense of where that concept came from and what is the idea behind it and what details are known about it?
Well, actually, there are a number of ideas being floated out about protecting sharks in the bay. The one I'm most familiar with would be expanding the existing Gulf of the Farallones Marine Sanctuary, which, as I'm sure you know, surrounds the waters around the Farallon Islands, just off San Francisco Bay. And unfortunately, between the Gulf of the Farallon Sanctuary and the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary, there's a piece, if you will, sort of like donut hole that somehow has been missed. And research that we've done here at the Aquarium of the Bay indicates that, unfortunately, that area is one of the areas of highest concentration of seven-gill sharks. So, of course, we are very supportive of the idea of expanding the sanctuary, be it the Gulf of the Farallones gets the donut hole or Monterey Bay can get the donut hole. Someone needs to get the donut hole, though, so that is a protected area.
And so why do we need a shark sanctuary in particular? Don't we have marine protected areas? I think David mentioned that already the concept of a marine protected area. Don't we have that currently? And why is a shark sanctuary different? Or is it different?
David, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, David.
Sure. There, like as Christina said, there have been these concepts thrown around trying to benefit species and perhaps habitat. Shark sanctuaries do exist in other parts of the world. Palau, for example, is an island nation in the Southwest Pacific. The Federated States of Micronesia, their whole waters are actually protected. No shark killing, no shark finning. That would be a little bit more difficult here, and that's not what we're looking at. I think what we're doing is trying to look at the data. What does it say? And part of our study working with Team Fish Finders is tagging sharks and measuring sharks and actually looking at growth rates and also population demography, that is how the population is striated or is situated around the bay in different cohorts or different size groups. So looking at pups, where do they pup? Looking at the big females, where are the big females? We think we know where they are. Steve knows where they are. Steve knows where all the big sharks are. How long do they hang out? Do they hang out seasonally? Do they leave the bay? What happens when they leave the bay? Well, we know from our preliminary data, we can't protect sharks once they enter the international waters. We've gotten returns from offshore fisheries. We've gotten returns from Canada. We've gotten returns from Baja California. And these are tag returns. So they're dead sharks. What we can do is hopefully protect the nursery. And as Steve said, I think in any population management, generally, you want to protect the reproductive females. So right now, you can catch a 7-gill shark of any size, one shark a day year-round on just a regular license. To me, I think that seems excessive. Steve feels it's excessive. And other people, I think, are inclined to agree because of what Christina said. They are slow growing. As Steve said, they're late in maturity, onset of maturity. They are important because they are apex predators. We really don't have a feel for the population size. We suspect it's rebounded. It probably has since the heavy fishing that occurred about 50 years ago. These fish were commercially fished to commercial extinction. They were no longer viable to go after. It takes sometimes a shark population 20, 30, possibly even 50 years before it can actually recover to what its levels were. Mm-hmm. And it probably never will because there aren't the kind of salmon and other great fish there used to be in the mm-hmm. bay 50 years ago.
So it sounds like some of the reason behind designating a sanctuary is just to create a safe space where you can understand more about the patterns of the sharks, the different species, and how they work and how they operate. Is there a sense that, you know, if you just do that, you'll also create a situation that will lead to a model that you'd want to spread to other parts of the bay?
Well, you know, off California, there was something called the Marine Life Protected Act. And that's a network of marine protected areas, no-take reserves, mixed-use, marine conservation areas. The last of that whole coastline is from Mendocino to Oregon. It's already been codified off our coastline. I was involved with that process. I made a film on it. And it's been enacted Central California, Santa Barbara coastline along there for almost 7 years. And then in Southern California, just passed a lawsuit, and it's in place now too. So there are these networks of marine protected areas. In the Marine Life Protected Act, that law, the San Francisco Bay was designated to be the next part, the fifth part of that wheel. Because of budget and because of the complexities of the San Francisco Bay system, it doesn't look like it's going to happen here. I was just in Sacramento today working with legislators. I've been working on some ocean policy. Today's Oceans Day in Sacramento. So not only just working on sharks, but other species like forage fish and some other ecosystem-based management, coho salmon, which is another part of Turtle Island, and also the leatherback, trying to get that designated an official marine reptile. But it's not just... You can't just protect one species at a time. We've learned that, and we've done very poorly. Steve talked about the surgeon. It's like, oh, well, I guess we didn't know enough about the biology, and we've fished them out, and we have to protect them now. I mean, you can go down species by species by species.
In this
reactive way. You just name your fish, and you can say, oops, we didn't have the proper biology, or we had too many fishermen fishing at the wrong time. So we want to gain that information, and we are. It's still a big bucket of unknowns, that ocean. You can't stick your head under and observe the whole reproduction cycle. But given that there are all these other insults, we've got pollution, we've got fishing, we've got ocean acidification, we've got contaminants. We have a lot of impacts happening on our world oceans. So we really need to think about the ocean as a whole, and that includes the whole ecosystem. So what we're doing is we're looking at certain areas in the bay, probably in advance of this Marine Life Protected Act, or maybe even recommending either seasonal closures, catch and release only of allows for banks in the bay. There are several different options, whether you want to call that a shark sanctuary or a marine protected area. That remains to be seen.
So it's a concept stage right now, and it sounds like the details of what it would look like are to be determined.
Yeah, and I think we need more information, and that kind of thing takes stakeholder input, which includes fishermen and includes everybody who has a stake in that, and that's what the whole MLPA process had.
So Steve, to you again, are there a certain rules on the books, so to speak, that are just not being enforced, that if they were enforced, a shark sanctuary wouldn't be necessary? Or do you feel like the concept of a shark sanctuary is different enough and important enough than what's perhaps already out there in terms of regulation?
Well, I think we need to change the regulations.
That it needs to be enforced more.
Yeah, I think we need to change the regulations. When you're fishing for seven-gill sharks, you should be using a barbless hook so you can release them easy. There should be size limits, and there should be a limit on how many you can take per year. If each person took one shark a day, you know, in 1 year, the population would be decimated. Mm-hmm. So we need to really, and that's what we're doing, is studying the population so that we can give information to the Fish and Game Department to change the regulations and to control it so the population will stay where it is and grow.
And would those regulations in your mind be enough, or is a shark sanctuary sort of another necessary parallel action now?
Well, when you look at all the sanctuaries, marine sanctuaries around the world, there's a huge difference. If you have two islands 5 miles apart and one's a sanctuary and one's a not, the one that is a sanctuary has marine life everywhere. It has sharks, everything. 5 miles away, it's void of life. So definitely sanctuaries are going to be the holding place for the future for marine life.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page to join our conversation tonight on City Visions on 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing San Francisco Bay's sharks with David McGuire, Christina Slager, and Steve Shirley. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. So let's go next to Kathy in San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a ton of questions, but I wanted to encourage the young caller.
Yes, Rally from Berkeley.
His teachers to arrange speakers from the various marine biologists to come to a school and give talks and movies and slideshows. And that would be fun for the other kids to see. And you could connect it to your biology classes other science classes in high school. And maybe have the marine biologists arrange for high schools to have, that they've had many high schools. You know, they split them up so that the kids can emphasize, like in public health or journalism or, many high schools, they could have one on endangered species to make all the learning more interesting at the high school level. All right.
Did you have a question as well? I want to make sure you get a chance to ask a question.
Are you working with Rick O'Berry of The Cove or Jacques Cousteau's grandson? I think his name's Philip. Those two. I'll hang up now. Thanks.
Oh, okay. Thanks. So,
I know Philippe and Fabian. We do work together sometimes in ocean policy or public awareness or education events, but not directly on this. I'm not a movie star. who did she say the other person that we were? Oh, Rick O'Berry. Well, we hosted Rick and Luis Sahoyos of The Cove at the San Francisco Ocean Film Festival and did a workshop afterwards. We work together in the goal of ocean protection and protecting these valuable species, not directly because they're entirely different. We're the shark guys and they're the marine mammal guys, and every ocean animal needs an advocate, so choose your own.
415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, and we'll go next to Mike. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello, yeah, this is Mike McHenry down in Half Moon Bay, and I've been fishing commercially for 53 years. I currently catch the live anchovies in San Francisco Bay for the party boats and stuff, so we deploy our nets quite a bit in the bay, and I'm fairly familiar with almost all the fisheries that I hear you guys talking about. I want to congratulate you guys. Your integrity sounds very good on some of the stuff you're talking about. I personally am against shark finning, you know, because they could bring the bodies in, at least use it for pet food or organic fertilizer or fish meal or something. I agree with you on that. As far as if you guys are worried about the sharks in San Francisco Bay, which there really are not a lot of them. If we get one in our net, we let it go, and it's definitely a novelty anymore. But I would think rather than shutting a whole area down and closing it off to, you know, herring fishermen, striper fishermen, halibut, which alienates a lot of people, I would suggest what one of the other fellows just said there a minute ago about catch and release. If you feel they're in trouble, go ahead and that way the party boats, they could catch them and just, boy, look at that big old thing. They decompress fine. They come up and will go right back down. And they're very stout animals. You wouldn't kill them. And just let them go, but leave the area open for the rest of the fisheries.
So Mike, I'm going to have you stay on the line while we get a couple of responses from our guests.
Okay.
So let's go to you, Steve. What's your thoughts?
I think that's a great idea, Mike. I feel like when you're targeting striped bass and halibut, you're using live anchovies.
Right.
And I floated around in the bay for the last 25 years fishing live bait, and I have never caught a 7-gill on live bait. You have to target 7-gill at a certain tide, a certain place, with a certain bait. And so I don't feel like sports fishermen that are targeting halibut, salmon, stripers, and those type of fish are going to do any damage to the shark populations in the bay.
Hmm. And yeah. David? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead,
David. Let's go have David comment, and then we'll have you comment again.
Well, Mike. I mean, I'd like to, speaking about integrity, Mike has a lot of it, and I know that he's highly regarded on the coastline from here down to Half Moon Bay, and he doesn't remember me probably, but I was behind a camera in a film called The Sheltered Sea where we interviewed him, and it was about the Marine Life Protected Act that he was greatly involved in, and he has seen the ocean change, and I think he's a voice of reason. He sees that it's not like it used to be, and that there do need to be some measures taken. I don't think at this point we're proposing shutting off the entire bay to fishing. Part of this is actually, just like the MLPA, trying to at least gather information, do some ecosystem assessment, try to get some population assessment. But we are seeing the sharks, the large sharks, targeted, and it is a concern. Maybe it's not a concern. Maybe there's enough. I think I agree with Mike. I don't think there are that many. And the population probably can't withstand really targeted pressure. So I think catch and release of sharks using techniques like Team Fish Finder is using, which are barbless hooks, makes it more of a challenge. And you've got to flip that thing off before that shark gets up on the deck anyway. You don't want to harm the animal. And the shark is gone, and they've had their sport. Even better, we can come along and we can measure, get some genetic material, do some blood, do some muscle tissue for an analysis for mercury, because these sharks are probably very high in mercury. Some preliminary analysis we've done show that it may not be the best thing for you to eat. And then let them go, and we'll get more data, and we'll know more about what to do. And then also have men like Mike, who fished the oceans and have seen them change, and have a vested interest, who care about the ocean and fisheries and want to see their kids fishing and everybody else to keep fishing. I do, too. And that's why we want a healthy ecosystem.
So, Mike, some comments in response to what you just heard. But most specifically, I wanted to ask you, how would you try to get the message that you're trying to put out tonight to your fellow party boat captains, who it sounds like perhaps you're not necessarily in line with their practices? I'm not sure, but how do we get this message out and practices to shift short of legislating it? Do you think there's a way to move this along and without that, or what do you think?
Well, I've always tried to find solutions rather than get in fights with each other. There's always these different groups. I was on the MLPA process, as you guys said, and I was the first to admit there were some of these places we need some closures. I'm not totally against it. I'm against closing the whole coast, but but I think certain closures in the right places have actually done the coast a lot of good. You really don't want to alienate, which would be a pile of people, when you start shutting off areas. And there's no reason to shut it off for halibut and stripers and your healthy fisheries. I think if you went to the sports guys and said, hey, you know what, you can still catch them. You can look down over the boat, take a picture of this big old behemoth, and then let it go. We all know that sharks don't eat very good. It's a shame to kill them if you're not going to eat them. And I sure as heck wouldn't throw a salmon back and keep a seven-gill shark to eat. Or I don't think anybody else would. So, yeah, I think that'd be a reasonable request if you honestly feel that their numbers are down. There's a lot of things like that, like the lingcod. They should put a slot fishery on it over a certain size, or the big females. Let them go like they do the sturgeon. Every fish has a way to govern it. And just closing off an area is really a very, very poor way. You take the fish that you want to save, and you put your thought into a way to do it, and leave the other fisheries open. And you'll find that you'll 9 out of 10 sports guys will be on your side.
Very good. Well, thanks so much, Mike, for your call and your comments.
Okie dokie. Good luck, you guys. Don't close the whole bay off. They did it with
Mike.
The Fairlawn Island Sanctuary, and they closed 70 miles of squid fishing to me.
So. All right, we've got to go. Thanks a lot. So, Christina, did you want to make a comment here as well?
Well, I think Mike makes a good point. There are a lot of stakeholders, and certainly a lot of people whose livelihood depends on access to fish and invertebrates. And certainly sports fisher persons, in many cases, are really devoted conservationists. You know, they appreciate the beauty. They've devoted part of their lives to being out at sea. So whatever the solution is, obviously we need to try and make it amenable to as many people as possible. But I think that's why we really need to focus on research, because we just don't know. Maybe there are zillions of seven-gill sharks swimming about. I mean, I highly doubt it. But, you know, until we're just hypothesizing at this point, until we have some hard science and some real answers, it's really just guessing.
Okay, we're going to go to our last caller really quickly. Scott from Piedmont, just really briefly, we have less than 3 minutes and left.
Okay, I laud all the efforts that all your guests are making. I'm curious about the state law. What can a state law actually do? Does it?
And you're talking about the shark fish ban for shark fin ban?
Yeah, the shark fin ban. Yeah. What actually does that do?
Okay. Thanks so much, Scott. Who wants to take that one?
Well, David, the fin ban actually enforces the sale, trade, and possession of a shark fin, and that is enacted in January 1, and it really goes full effect July next year. And that's basically to stop the importation of fin sharks. Our country made it illegal in 2000 and closed a loophole in 2011. It's illegal to kill a shark just for its fins in our waters. Unfortunately, these black market fins are coming into our state, and that's why there are bans here. We're working on going to Chicago this week. We're starting one in Texas and other states and other countries.
And Christina, last word from you. What are the next steps in the process of further defining the goals and the boundaries of the shark sanctuary in the bay?
Raising public awareness, raising education focused on sharks, and again, collecting more data that is statistically significant so we have some hard science to base our decisions on.
And how many years out before that gets implemented?
gosh, we have a long way to go. So we need some big funders to fund all this very important work. But I couldn't really say. It's not in the immediate future, unfortunately.
And a website where people can learn more about the efforts to create a shark sanctuary in the bay? Anyone?
We have Marine Protected Area at seastewards.org or sharkstewards.org.
Okay, and we'll link that to our website through klw.org. Well, that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were David McGuire, director and founder of Sea Stewards and currently the director of shark programs with the Turtle Island Restoration Network, Christina Slager, director of animal care and exhibits at the Aquarium of the Bay, and Steve Shirley, founder of Team Fish Finder, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable sport fishing. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
You are very welcome.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to learn about other upcoming shows, to listen to previous shows, and to give us feedback on tonight's show, go to klw.org and search for City Visions, and you can post a comment there. Our engineer this evening was Eric Wayne. Our producer was our new senior producer. Welcome to Susie Britton. And thanks so much to Judith Sansone for her years of service to us. Neil Friess manages our website. Join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next Monday as we discuss the America's Cup. This is Joseph Pace. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.